Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for July 23rd, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
It's a very connected world, and understanding how activities in one spot affect the environment in another spot or affect your life in another spot is going to be really important.
There'll be just thousands of species migrating from the one ocean into the other, and these two biogeographic regions have been independent for just about a million years.
If we're right about this, this is potentially not good for climate change.
Last month was the hottest June on record, and scientists around the world are in a race against time to understand the potential ecological and societal effects of climate change. This week, we'll tell you why bacteria and the thawing Arctic permafrost could have a big impact on carbon dioxide levels, why warming trends could reunite species separated for millions of years, and about the search for more efficient air conditioners. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on a large-scale environmental monitoring project.
Astronomers have the Hubble telescope, physicists have CERN's particle accelerator, and now ecologists may soon get their own big science project. 10 years in the planning, it's called the National Ecological Observatory Network, NEON for short, and it has a line item in the president's 2011 budget. If Congress approves it, NEON will set up 62 identical study sites throughout the country and run them for decades. Aquatic team manager Heather Powell says this whole continent observatory will help scientists address the important questions of the future.
The point is, it's a very connected world, and understanding how activities in one spot affect the environment in another spot or affect your life in another spot is going to be really important.
In particular, climate change, land use, and invasive species are among NEON's top priorities.
Thanks, Suzanne. The BP oil spill in the Gulf has reminded us just how dependent we are on the health of the oceans. But as Justin Warner reports, scientists think the long-term effects of climate change on the oceans may make the spill seem like just a drop in the bucket.
Climate change is transforming the world's oceans at a potentially huge cost. This according to a landmark study recently published in the journal Science. According to study co-author John Bruno of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the changes are as deep and wide as the ocean itself.
We're changing just about every measurable chemical and physical and geological aspect of the ocean. So we're warming it, particularly near the poles. We're acidifying it, and that's because about 40% of the CO2 that we emit into the atmosphere gets absorbed by the ocean, and that combines with seawater to make something called carbonic acid. We're affecting the stratification of the ocean, so that's just kind of the layering, so how much it's mixed. And the more it's mixed, the more nutrient-rich water from the deep comes up into the shallow water, and it has implications for food webs and fisheries and all kinds of things.
In the coming decades, many of these changes will reach irreversible tipping points. For example, Bruno notes that melting Arctic sea ice will soon open up a channel between the North Atlantic and the North Pacific.
Shipping companies are already planning on using the Northern Passage for cargo transportation right over the North Pole. They can get from Europe over into the North Pacific. They think they'll be able to do that in about 2 decades. And there's something else that's going to be using that shipping route, and it's organisms. So we're going to be seeing thousands of species migrating from the one ocean into the other. And these two biogeographic regions have been independent for just about a million years.
Other changes involve domino effects that may be counterintuitive. That's the case with the so-called dead zones that have appeared along the coast of the Pacific Northwest. Every summer since 2002, long stretches of these vital fishing waters have seen deadly drops in oxygen. Bruno explains that climate change has shifted wind patterns in the area, which has increased the upwelling of nutrients offshore.
And at first, you'd think that'd be great because it would increase fisheries production, because the more plants eat, there's more grazers, then there's more predators. Everything sounds great. The problem is the predators are unable to eat all the plants that get created. The plants die, sink down to the bottom. They get consumed by bacteria. The bacteria consume the oxygen, and they create these very anoxic, very low oxygen layers all along the seafloor off the coast.
Add to all of this rising sea levels, which threaten coastal communities worldwide, and a host of other changes. Bruno says that unless we seriously curtail carbon emissions, we may soon have to adapt to radically different oceans, the likes of which have never been seen in the entire history of the Earth.
Thanks, Justin. Next, science writer Chelsea Wald traveled to the North Slope of Alaska recently to find out how the Arctic is responding to climate change.
In the Arctic, permanently frozen soils called permafrost store gigatons of old carbon like a giant freezer. And now some of them are thawing. That raises an important question. Will the carbon in thawed permafrost go into the atmosphere and contribute to global warming, or will it somehow remain earthbound? Microbial ecologist Byron Crump of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science says the answer depends on Arctic bacteria, because it's the bacteria that eat the organic soil matter and transform it into carbon dioxide.
But sometimes that organic matter is in a form that's hard for the bacteria to use. You know, sort of old, crappy stuff maybe that the bacteria can't really turn into carbon dioxide, can't really use as food. And if that's the case, then that stuff's going to come out of the soils, go down the streams, spill into the ocean, and just stay there. It's like going from one freezer to another freezer, in a way. But if light were to kind of cook that organic matter into something that the bacteria can use, well, then they'll use it and release it as carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, contributing to global climate change.
With biogeochemist Rose Corey of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Crump is running an experiment to find out how much cooking is just right for the bacteria. They're taking material from naturally thawed permafrost, exposing it to light, and then feeding it to the bacteria that live in the Arctic. Their early findings suggest that the bacteria will find the organic matter quite tasty after only just a bit of cooking from the sun. In other words, Corey says the bacteria seem likely to eat the matter before it makes it into the ocean deep freeze.
If we're right about this, this is potentially not good for climate change because it means that, you know, this organic matter is going to be very easily turned over from a stable pool of carbon to CO2 in the atmosphere.
Which means that these bacteria may be part of a global warming feedback loop. Global warming causes permafrost to thaw. Bacteria turn carbon from the thawed permafrost into carbon dioxide, which leads then to more warming and more permafrost thawing. Once the feedback loop has started, scientists don't know where it will stop.
Thanks, Chelsea. It's a cruel irony that air conditioning contributes to carbon emissions that make the planet hotter. But engineers are designing a new air conditioning system that could use 50 to 90% less electricity than today's best models. It's called DVAP, short for Desiccant Enhanced Evaporative Air Conditioner, and it's being developed at the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Lab. Senior engineer Eric Kozabal says it uses an indirect form of evaporative cooling, which lowers the actual temperature of the circulated air.
But as people know, in humid climates like Houston, you also have to dehumidify your space. And that is a form of cooling called latent cooling. So both of those are required to create comfortable conditions.
For that, they use a liquid desiccant that dries the air while it's being cooled. Kozabal says the idea of combining these forms of cooling isn't new, but their prototype is the first with potential to be practical and cost-effective. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll tell you about a new vocal screening test for autism and how both wrens and penguins use their songs and calls to keep their mates interested. Until then, tune in to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.